This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. Another trading week getting ready to wrap up. I'm Cisco Cotto. Right now, 71 degrees in Chicagoland. We're heading to a high of 76. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Entrepreneur Friday, the Franchise Expo is headed to Chicago, an opportunity for some of you to become entrepreneurs. Also, we may finally have a tenant at the former Marshall Field building. Possibly disastrous consequences when contract talks go nowhere. We'll cover that in our next segment. Someone may have sabotaged an airplane. Right now, it's all about today's jobs report. We're joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, welcome back to the show. So I guess give us sort of a thumbnail on this jobs report, short of expectations, but still not what we really call a terrible jobs report.
You summed it up perfectly. 130,000 is a decent number considering how tight the labor market is getting and some smaller businesses having trouble to find employees. It was less than the roughly 150,000 increase in terms of that increase in non-farm payrolls, but a decent number. I would simply highlight two other very important things. Wages went up because of a very tight labor situation, 3.2%. That's a very decent increase. And the labor market participation rate, that's a mouthful, rose to 63.2. That means a lot of workers are coming back into the labor force and finding good jobs. So I would say all in all, it was quite a decent number.
In a way, it seems like many analysts focus on the unemployment rate, but in a way, is that labor participation rate maybe more important to pay attention to?
Excellent point. Yes, indeed it is, because that's the good news side of the labor market. With so many unemployed workers at one point not able to come back into the labor force and find jobs, is exactly the opposite now. And the Fed chairman has emphasized that even those moderate income communities that had not seen much of any strength are now seeing the unemployment rate dropping, good jobs available. So in essence, this 11-year economic expansion, a record one, is filtering down to Main Street in a very positive way.
Yeah, the wage growth you talked about, it seems like there are implications for the wider economy if people have more money to spend.
Highly important point. That good performance in wages means a good performance by the consumer. We've seen consumer spending strength basically keeping the economy going. Consumers are 70% of the economy. And as Fed Chairman Powell just referred to a minute ago, said in Switzerland, the economy's in a good place. He intends to keep it that way. That says to me that we're going to get another rate cut at the Fed's September meeting, justified by these jobs numbers. But where we go after that will depend on how the new numbers coming in behave, and particularly how this global risk situation, including the trade war, is handled. All in all, though, the Fed chairman even said that these job numbers were consistent with an economy that's in a good place.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Always good stuff. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors based in Denver. He's the author of the book, Understanding Central Banking. Coming up, how stalled contract talks led to a sabotaged airplane. When contract talks get stalled or heated, one issue that usually does not come up is sabotage. It did in Florida. Let's talk about handling unintended consequences of the negotiation process. Ken Goldstein is joining us, president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Ken, we're talking about apparently sabotaging an airplane.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for having me on, Cisco. Yeah, this is an incident that took place in July on a flight that American had going from Miami to Nassau. It was a 737-800, not a MAX, so let's make that clear. There were 150 people on board. The pilot went down, powered up, and saw an error message, came back, and they took the aircraft out, and in routine maintenance checking on it, they discovered that something had been done to the pitot tubes and going into the ADM, which is the automatic data module, aircraft data module. And at that time, it was about 2 or 3 days later, American called the government in for investigators. Fortunately, they had tapes of the aircraft at the gate. They found someone who they determined was there who shouldn't have been there. This was a mechanic that usually is in the back in the hangars and taking care of the aircraft there. He was up front. Many people traveling will always see a mechanic, you know, as they when a plane comes in from one place, they do a quick check on it and then try to get it out as soon as possible. What they found was this mechanic, and he was identified. He was arrested yesterday, and he is to appear in federal court in Miami today on airline tampering. His claim was, I was upset with the negotiations being stalled, but he also made an interesting comment. The interesting comment was, I was hoping because there's a minor touch, if you will, he just put some foam and superglued it, blocking information going to the computer system, that it would come back and he'd be able to get some overtime working on it. So there's two things here. The unions immediately have come back and said, no, 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 it's not us. We believe in safety. But again, remember back in May, American sued both the IAM and the Transport Workers Union for slowdowns that they were causing because they couldn't turn the planes fast enough in maintenance. So you got a bunch of issues here.
And when it is a situation like this, regardless of whether the guy says that it was dangerous or not, or that was his intention, for passengers who are hearing this, sort of scary to think that someone who works for an airline might do that.
Well, that is in itself, but let's take back to the issue. Had the plane taken off, could it be flown without a problem? Yes, it would have been had flown by hand, if you will, and as opposed with the computer assistance. Was there a danger into the aircraft? Probably not, because you got some very qualified pilots there. But is this something we should be concerned about? Yes. And this is where the issue of security comes involved. When airplanes come into the gate, for example, they're immediately checked and they want to get them out of there, as I said earlier. In many instances, for example, the olden days British Airways used to have crews that would guard the aircraft while it was in. So this way, they would just allow the crew to come on, check the aircraft, the cleaners get in, and they have to get the plane out of it. They didn't want anyone else on board. Hopefully, we're not going to the more stringent security, but this is an incident that right now has picked up all over the news, and it's something we should be concerned about. By and large, flying today is still safe.
And that's probably, I'm guessing, a reminder that the airlines certainly want all passengers to hear. Things are still safe.
Without a doubt. And the comment from the president of American, safety is our most important issue. You will find that to be everywhere. And safety is an important issue. One thing that did come up, which is interesting, when I was doing some research before this, in Hong Kong, where, you know, they've had the incidents with the blocking the airport, they had an issue where the oxygen tanks, empty oxygen tanks, were found on an aircraft and life vests were not there. And they suspended a bunch of flight crew members, and they now have instituted stricter security measures on who gets on board the aircraft while it's being turned and who not. Whether or not this is related to the protests, who knows, but the Hong Kong Safety Agency and the Chinese Safety Agency is now jumping in saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? But by and large, all this does point to one thing. People are concerned about safety, and that's most important.
Thanks for the insight. Always good to have you with us. Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Up next, portions of a Chicago landmark converted from retail are close to getting its first office tenant.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The company that is converting the upper floors of the landmark State Street Marshall Field building to office space is close to landing its first tenant there. Let's get some details with Danny Ecker, reporter with Crain's Chicago Business. Danny, before we find out about the new tenant that is supposedly moving there, or at least reportedly, just kind of talk about that building a little bit and how it's certainly changing as some of it's been sold off.
Yeah, there's a lot of attention on it right now. People know it as the Marshall Field Building, or now Macy's is there. And the upper six floors or so of the building have been empty for a long, long time, just not used. Last year, this real estate giant, Brookfield Properties, they're out of Toronto, they bought those floors from Macy's and said, we're going to turn them into offices. And so they're in the process of doing that now. It's kind of a cool building, you know, very old building and a lot of history behind it. And they're, you know, turning it into about 650,000 square feet of offices on the top six floors. And that's what they're in the market to try to fill right now.
And there was a period of time, actually quite a long period of time, where it was just sort of abandoned up there, maybe some loose storage.
Right. And that's, and you know, if you get a chance ever to see photos of it or walk through it, it's really cool looking up there. You know, I mean, they have some interesting, you know, just little design things that you thought, why was this so closed off to the public? And now what we know is that Vivid Seats, which is a secondary ticket marketplace that's been growing really quickly here in Chicago, you know, a rival of StubHub and SeatGeek and other online secondary ticket marketplace sites, they're expanding here. They've been in the market looking for new office space, and they might they're said to be in pretty advanced talks at this point to move their office to one of these new floors.
So, what is it about that location that is going to be so attractive, not only to Vivid Seats but also other folks?
Yeah, I mean, it's got kind of the cool, old-timey, vintage look that a lot of companies, especially tech companies, covet these days. Obviously, when you're in the central loop, it's you know, you got a lot of access to transportation, public transportation, and there's, of course, plenty of amenities to go around. But it has been interesting just to watch the evolution of the central loop. You know, this is an area that obviously has been, you know, heart of the central business district for a century or more. But you've had recently some banks and financial services and law firms that have moved out and look into new buildings that are in the West Loop. So you've kind of had these Central Loop older buildings that have had to reinvent themselves like this one. And you're starting to see examples like this where some, you know, growing tech companies and innovative companies are opting to go there if they have kind of modern amenities and they've been updated.
Really interesting to see the transformation. Thank you, Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, where franchisers look for franchisees.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Hundreds of franchisers and franchisees prepare to check each other out. That's coming up on Entrepreneur Friday, the retail concept that aims to bridge the online and bricks and mortar divide. The news for drivers about the Jane Byrne Interchange project is positive, slightly. Hurricane Dorian moves out to sea after battering the North Carolina coast. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 128 points. The NASDAQ is up 10 and the S&P is up 8. Oil up about 0.5%. Gold is down about 0.5%. 71 degrees in Chicagoland right now. We're heading to a high of 76. Cloudy throughout most of the day, though we will see the sun occasionally. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are slightly higher. Let's see what's going on. Gary Kaltbaum is joining us, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, also a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. His website, GaryK.com. Gary, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, Powell's out speaking right now out of Switzerland, talking about easier money. They're going to act appropriately, which means lower rates, and that's what's been lifting markets for 10 years. And we're starting to get a little lift again this week and probably continues into the Fed meeting. And a lot of expectations are for a quarter point. I'm wondering if they're going to do a half point. And if they do, I think markets react pretty decently to it.
And what do you make, I guess, given the entire week? We're sort of up and down, but a pretty positive week, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a great reaction to no news on China, even though people were trying to say it was news. I just think this is all about central banks around the globe easing like crazy, negative rates. You have Europe going to print more money. Powell saying basically today, if need be, we'll print more money again. And again, for 10 years, markets have reacted well to that for whatever reason why, and I think the beat goes on.
Yeah, why is that? Why do you think so many people like that cheap money?
Easier money means higher markets. Simple as that. Easier money means cost of capital to do business goes down. Of course, easier money really hurts the saver also, but they don't really care about the saver right now. They want to keep the economy going. They think they have all the tools.
Yeah, it may make it tougher for the longer-term investor, too, because at some point the easy money has to stop.
Well, there's $250 trillion of government debt around the globe that's been enabled by the easy money, including 22 heading to 23 trillion here. One would have to think there will be a day of reckoning, but who knows when that can be. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, I would have said it would have been in a year or two, and we're 5 years down the road. So they're still willing to cut another credit card for the last one, and until that ends, who knows where it stops.
Let's talk about WeWork. It's kind of a story today, as they were expecting a pretty big IPO, and now they may not do an IPO at all.
If I was them, I wouldn't. Believe it or not, and I don't think I've seen this in a very long time, they're telling the private equity buyers, at least the recent ones, that they're looking to cut whatever they put into it in half because they thought the valuations were too high. That tells me the investment bankers in WeWork made a just colossal mistake. And I'm not sure this is going to come public. The other thing is they keep trying to tell people they're different than other real estate companies. No, they're just real estate company. And they are not immune to recessions or tough real estate environments. And they have a much larger cap than like Regis, which is owned by another company, who basically does the same thing. So I have a sneaking suspicion, A, if they're smart, I wouldn't bring it public. But if they do, this is not going to be received well. And we have noticed in the last year, Uber and Lyft were the last two and that one symbol work, that when you lose money in this type of market as an IPO and you come out with a ridiculous valuation, the market's going to pay a penalty on you.
Yeah, are you seeing less of a taste for people taking risks on some of those companies losing big money?
Oh, yeah. And look, Wall Street did it again. They brought these companies public at just ridiculous valuations, thinking that maybe we're in this time that people will pay any price for anything. But that's not the case. And you're seeing some 20, 30, 40, 50% markdowns from IPO prices. And nobody's talking about in the last 2 years, a bunch of Chinese IPOs came public that are down 90% because they lose a ton of money. So I actually think that's good news. There's some sanity involved. And hopefully they learn a lesson going forward because valuation does matter.
Yeah, hopefully the sanity lasts for sure. Gary Kaltbaum, always appreciate you being with us. He is president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday. It is a franchise marriage market.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. Only an entrepreneur would take on running a franchise. The super shopping type event for franchisers and franchisees happens in Rosemont. We're with Tom Portese right now, CEO of Franchise Expo Chicago. That happens next weekend, Friday and Saturday at the Rosemont Convention Center. Tom, it's good to have you with us. So for someone who has ever wanted to be an entrepreneur, wanted to maybe get into being a franchisee, what's going on here at the Expo?
Hey, good afternoon, Cisco. Well, what's going to happen is there's going to be about 150 companies who are franchises ranging from $10,000 investment to $5 million investment and everything in between, and covering just about any industry you could think of.
And so if someone is maybe at the early stages and they're going, I think I want to go ahead and maybe get into the franchise business, what are they going to do? They're going to show up and talk with people who have franchises to license? They're just going to kind of go booth to booth?
Yeah, they're going to do that. They're going to go online. They're going to look at what companies are going to be there, maybe do some research prior. And they're also going to take advantage of all the seminars that take place on site, everything from what you should do in purchasing a business, how to research, how to finance a business, what options there are.
And so they're going to learn. It's more than just necessarily maybe marrying between two. You're also going to find out a little information on what it's like to be running a franchise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very comprehensive educational programs, most of them free.
So who's the person who should be coming to something like this? Who's a person who's maybe saying, hey, spending Friday and Saturday there, that's for me?
Well, you know, anyone who's looking to be in business for themselves but typically don't want to go buy do-it-all themselves, you know, they're looking for a proven concept. They're looking for support and training. That's what franchising is all about. It's the person who wants to be in business for themselves but really wants that secure, successful brand that's going to provide them not only with the how-to, but also with the ongoing support.
And in an economy like this, in which getting a job is pretty easy, wages are going up, is this maybe a time that people are feeling more confident about taking the risks that go along with going ahead and getting into a franchise?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's funny. Franchising appeals to people, you know, regardless of what's happening with the economy. When the economy is bad, they want to take control of their future. When the economy is good, they want to take advantage of this upswing. I think right now is really a great time to go into business for yourself. You know, there's more disposable income than there's been. There's lots of wants and needs, and franchising is a great way to do it.
Talk about going into business for yourself. I heard you say that, and that, I think, may be the thing that probably drives more people, maybe even just about everyone, to get into this.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I think everybody wants to be in business for themselves. So kind of what stops them? The fear of failure, the indecision about when to pull that trigger, how to go about it. Again, I sound a little bit like a broken record, but franchise, you know, clears all those hurdles. You know, they have a proven system. They have the different things. They have the support there that when things are going to get difficult, they could do it. So it alleviates so much of the reasons why people don't take that step.
Talk about some of the opportunities that people are going to find at the expo, some of the business concepts.
Well, you know, they're going to go from A to Z, right? So they're going to have automotive and they're going to have one great way of describing it, Cisco, is that I always say there's daycare, you know, child care, senior care, and pet care. I mean, it covers the gamut. There's business-to-business franchises. There's food, there's specialty food, there's everything you could imagine. I think franchising now touches every industry. I can't think of one it doesn't.
So then people who are even thinking about this, they're not going to have to get into something that they don't want to do and sort of get stuck with it. They can find something they're interested in.
That's exactly right. You know, it's going to give them the opportunity to find what they're passionate about, something that they wanted to do, but didn't necessarily have the tools necessary or the blueprint. This is going to get them to marry the opportunity to make a great living and to enjoy what they're doing every day.
So what do you find maybe keeps people away, makes them a little skittish, where the franchise opportunities, there's so many of them and they're great and so many of them work out well, but there's some folks who stay on the sidelines even though they might be pretty good at this?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it comes down to that option paralysis. You know, you don't know where to begin. There's so many different opportunities, as you say. They get this option paralysis. And a show like this helps them get past that, right? They could see the gamut of what's there. They could talk to people. They could physically go up and speak to senior people at these different organizations, find out what it's really all about. They could sit in, as I say, on all of these educational seminars, actually ask and learn what questions to go and back on the show floor and ask.
Yeah, really a way to dip your toe in the water without risk if you are thinking about it. This is next weekend, Friday and Saturday, at the Rosemont Convention Center, the Franchise Expo Chicago. That is Tom Portese, CEO of Franchise Expo Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Tom, on Entrepreneur Friday. Up next, flipping the retail narrative on what used to be called the showroom phenomenon.
because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Here's a thought. A store within a store that has no inventory. Could it save bricks and mortar? Joining us, Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, we're talking about Nordstrom here. I don't know if anyone thought of a store with no merchandise inside of it, but that's what Nordstrom's trying here.
Yeah, and it's actually a good idea. They began testing this in 2017. The stores average somewhere around 3,000 square feet, I think. Some of them as small as 2,000 square feet. Maybe one that's a little bigger because they're trying to get the size exactly the way they want it. And you say to yourself, why does it have to be any size at all? There's no merchandise in it. But what there is in it is a place to lounge, a place to return stuff, a place to get your shoes repaired, a place to get your handbag repaired, and in the one in the West Village that they're building, a place to get your stroller cleaned while you wait. But the real beauty of it is, before you go to return something or go hang out there or have your nails done or do something in the little place to get you to come in the place, you go online, you pick out some cool stuff that you want to buy or try on, and you have it sent over to that little shop. Or you call your personal shopper and you say, I'm going to be in the little store down the block from me, and could you send over a selection of cool stuff you think I might want to be wearing in the fall season? And you try them on, and if you don't like them, they just stay there. And if you like them, guess what? You buy them. So this will allow them to do this with no additional inventory. It'll make it really friendly to the customer. They'll feel really cozy and warm being in this little place where they're treated really well. And you'll be surprised how many of them will be trying on clothes there, even though there's no merchandise. The other thing they're doing is they're putting fashion shows in the little place. So some that's a new hot brand, you go there and there'll be a display of it saying, hey, this is what some particular designer is showing for this season, to get your attention and make you think about, gee, maybe I should be wearing that.
A lot of people loved online ordering because they could try it on. If they didn't like it, they could send it back. But I mean, this seems to eliminate a step because you don't have to take the clothing somewhere.
So much easier. You just show up and there it is for you. You don't like it, it stays there. You don't have to deal with it.
So Nordstrom, it sounds like you mentioned getting nails done and some of the other services. The actual square footage can be a moneymaker as well as having people come in and try things on and maybe return or buy items.
Yeah, it's really experimental. You know, some, they're trying nail salons. They got a juice bar in one. I think they may even have a liquor bar in one of them. But just things that will make the customer comfortable and want to stay and be there longer and make it feel like it's their kind of place. Because we all know a Nordstrom's is their kind of place, right? The new store in New York is going to be 320,000 square feet of merchandise. The little store that they're building in the West Village is going to be 1,800 square feet of nothing but making me feel good.
Does this work best in dense urban environments?
It works best where there's already a big Nordstrom store that you know you love, and it's inconvenient, right, if you're in the West Village to go all the way up to, I think the new store is 59th Street, and you can just do the same thing in the little store if you have a personal shopper in the big store. So, yes, it'll work better in urban environments. It'll work better in places where people know the brand. It'll work better in places where there's a big store that can feed the little stores. And so far, they're only testing it in places where that's true.
Really interesting. We'll certainly keep tabs on it. Thank you, Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.